This is a gratitude session 2017, first full talk. A poem by Jane Hirschfield. Lake and maple. I want to give myself utterly, as this maple that burned and burned for 3 days without stinting, and then in two more dropped off every leaf. As this lake that, no matter what comes to its green blue depths, both takes and returns it. In the still heart that refuses nothing, the world is twice born, two earths wheeling, two heavens, to egrets reaching down into subtraction, even the fish for an instant doubled before it is gone. I want the fish. I want the losing it all when it rains, and I want the returning transparence. I want the place by the edge flowers where the shallow sand is deceptive, where whatever steps in must plunge, and I want that plunging. I want the ones who come in secret to drink only in early darkness, and I want the ones who are swallowed. I want the way this water sees without eyes, hears without ears, shivers without will or fear at the gentlest touch. I want the way it accepts the cold moonlight and lets it pass, the way it lets all of it pass without judgment or comment. There is a lake, Lala Dead saying, no larger than one seed of mustard, that all things return to. O heart, if you will not, cannot give me the lake, then please give me the song. People of all walks, all times, all traditions report that when the ordinary, self-centered perspective on life is turned over, worn through, dissolved, when the ordinary self-centered and other-centered perspective is put in perspective, is put in its proper place, what remains, what is known, what is enjoyed is a life of peace. A life where each thing shines with its intrinsic value, each encounter, each person, each challenge. A life that is vivid and present like a sudden pinprick, and transparently serene like the sound of moonlight. When the ordinary self-centered perspective on life is turned over, seen through, broken through, dissolved, then we're inclusive, we're human, we're responsive. This Dharma will bless our life at whatever level we meet it. We'll bless our life with whatever depth of aspiration we bring to it. And what is celebrated in Dharma is not special experiences. What is celebrated in Dharma is not mystical accomplishment. What is celebrated in all spiritual paths is the beautiful virtues of the heart. So in practice, where desire is channeled, where our elan vital is upgraded, is into these virtues of the heart. And it's almost as if just naming them, just bringing them to attention, just calling them out, just intending, inclining toward their emergence is the task, is all that is asked of us, because they're latent. And so I call in tenderness and I call in sincerity. I call in forbearance for this short time and for the future. And I call in big vision. I call in no BS clarity about ego's mischief. Can we invite that? I call in no BS clarity about ego's mischief. I call in the willingness to listen and the willingness to feel. I call in the willingness to see my flaws and the motivation and energy to transmute them into wisdom. I call in humility, and I'll try to call in some humor. I call in one pointed gathering of attention. I invite, I invoke, I incline to the Bodhisattva of Compassion's very vast heart. I call in, I invoke, I invite Manjushri's double-edged sword, cutting two into one, cutting one into many. So moment by moment, whether I face a barrier or I face open sky, I call on, I incline, I invoke, I enact. We call on, we invoke, we enact the beautiful virtues of the heart, turning over ordinary mind again and again and again, always. May this devotion and may this aspiration be so, and may it be deeply and firmly rooted. And we celebrate Zazen as a universal gateway for widening access to the virtues of the heart. And even more so than Dogen Zenji, who's kind of hardcore. He's pretty uncompromising, amazing, perhaps unparalleled genius, but he's not a featherweight. Even more than Dogen Zenji, I feel that Master Hongzhi, Japanese Wanshi Shogaku, expresses the lineage flavor of Great Vow in ZCO. And so we've been chanting some of his poems for more than a decade now, daily or weekly. And I get the sense from his writings that the autumn was the time that most inspired and sparked his poetic imagination. Maybe in the fall, we could imagine that he retired to a hermitage after the summer ongo, a long, hard, humid ongo. In the old days, ongo was 90 days of session. No breaks, no days off. So maybe after the long ongo, he retired to a hermitage hut on the mountain behind the monastery to do some personal practice and study. And being long seasoned in the way his body-mind become, the crisp, expansive, crimson and amber forest mountains, the big autumn moon, his mind moon. And then maybe during the tea breaks, reflecting on his beloved students, wondering how in the world am I going to help people see their true nature? It's right there, but maybe he jotted down something to leave behind of inspiration, something to communicate a flavor of his heart, something of a legacy for us future practicers of the way. Sometimes we don't know why something is being drawn forth from our heart. We can't quite see the reason, the audience, the recipient of the gift that we are sitting here brewing, or we are living our lives brewing, has not yet come forward. But that time comes, and there's a meeting, and there's an offering, there's an actualization of giver, receiver, and gift. Well, I don't know the situation in which he wrote this beautiful poem, but I'm going to read part of it. We chanted it this afternoon, the Guideposts of Silent Illumination. He wrote silent and serene, forgetting words, bright clarity appears before you. When you reflect it, you become vast. Where you embody it, you are spiritually uplifted. Spiritually solitary and shining, inner illumination restores wonder. Dew in the moonlight, a river of stars. Snow-covered pines, clouds envelop the peak. In darkness, it is most bright, yet while hidden, all the more manifest. The crane dreams in the wintry mists. The autumn waters flow far in the distance. Endless eons are totally empty, all things completely the same. When wonder exists in serenity, all achievement is forgotten in illumination. What is this wonder? Alertly seeing through confusion is the way of silent illumination and the origin of subtle radiance. Silent and serene, forgetting words, bright clarity appears before you. We know this realm. This realm, this perspective calls to us. We're seemingly distant. This realm nourishes us if that's where we abide. The silence in this particular text by other translators is worded as serenity. So serene illumination, silent illumination is not merely the absence of sound, not the absence of form, but the transparency of them. Silent illumination, serene illumination is not only the absence of thought and emotion, which is quite a nice state to taste and to know, but a state. It's not their absence, it's the transparency of them, the weightlessness of them. I like to do a meditation on weightlessness. I think I first got the idea from Koan Edjo, the resonance we've been chanting, Komyozo Zanmai, and Edjo Zenji has a line, sitting under the open sky, weightless as a flame. And one time in Sanzen, Chosen Roshi said to me, "You must become weightless." What does that mean? Cut down on peanut butter? Forfeit the tea tree? What does it mean? What are you talking about? But when I do the meditation on weightlessness, I zoom into my direct experience and I search for the experience of weight. You can try that. Do you experience weight? I zoom into my direct experience and I search for the experience of mass, of solidity. And I don't find that. Weightless as a flame. Serenity could be called the ambiance of awareness. The atmosphere of awareness is serene. It could be that we are a people in the modern era stimulated to an unprecedented degree. Some of the old Taoist texts, they used to talk about somebody who listens to the playing of a lute might spoil their senses because they're indulging in the richness of sound. You can't believe. They wouldn't be able to fathom the amount of stimulation that's piped into us. Has any people in history had more chemical stimulation, more technological stimulation, more conceptual stimulation than now? This is neither good nor bad in itself, but if we are conditioned to this constant stream of stimulation, then we might have an extra challenge in appreciating the ambiance of awareness. We might have an extra challenge in being satisfied with the taste of moonlight. could notice. And I think this is a very important place to bring keen attention. What is your reflex when the realm of edgeless quiet starts to emerge in you? What's the reflex? You might find that you have some argument with being at peace, some discomfort or some rationale why you shouldn't, why you couldn't, not now. What about them? What about her? Not good enough. Should have, could have. We might be uncomfortable with completion. This moment is complete. Then what perspective does that put my plans? This moment is complete. It's always been complete. And what perspective does that put my accomplishments? As the realm of edgeless quiet starts to emerge, we could encounter a panicking fear. It's quite common. A pounding heart, sweaty armpits, grasping for solid ground when our life starts to flirt with expansion. What we most long for, in a way, we deeply fear. Hongzhi said, where you embody it, you are spiritually uplifted. And so for me, the question is, where do I not embody it? Where and when and why do I default to ordinary reactive mind? Spiritually solitary and shining, inner illumination restores wonder. Dew in the moonlight. A river of stars, snow-covered pines, clouds enveloping the peak. In darkness, it is most bright, while hidden all the more manifest. The crane dreams in the wintry mists. The autumn waters flow far in the distance. What is it about a child's state of mind that is delightful? What is it about a puppy or a kitten's state of mind that is invigorating? We may have lost freshness as a quality of presence and be looking everywhere for it. We may be aware of wonder's absence. We may carry the knowledge of the absence of wonder with us, and doing whatever we can to fill that lack. Hongzhi has these metaphors, potent with meaning. Dew in the moonlight, a river of stars, snow-covered pines, clouds enveloping the peak. There's a Japanese phrase, mono no aware. Mono no aware means something like the beauty of ephemera, the beauty, the deep value of life because of its transiency, because one moment, one encounter, one breath. Now, as transiency, identified as a body-mind that's in constant flux with no place to stand, there's only transiency. And regarding transiency, looking from one side, it's loss. Impermanence is unwanted transformation. It's grief. It's the universal human spiritual path of those we love coming and going, those we love aging, changing, becoming, transforming into different beings. Looking at transiency from the other side, this principle is gain, It's creativity, it's evolution, it's relief that things change, it's release that everything goes away. Nothing accepted. So as transiency, there's only transiency. As transiency, there's only transiency. This is what sparked the Buddha's search. He looked out and saw only transiency and said, wait a second. This cannot be the whole story. Wait a second. Sparked his search. As transiency, there's only transiency. Not in touch with the counterpoint. The ballast, the ever-present Dharma, the unmoving peaks, the ancient pines, then the hungry and consuming mouth of time is something like a monster. The hungry and consuming mouth of time is something like a monster that's always in our closet, in due time swallowing everything up, spitting everything out. And there's no feeling of rest. There's no place of abiding. There's no place of refuge. It is said that the Dharma eye, the eye that sees, cannot see itself, just like a blade cannot cut itself. And yet, we can open it wide. The eye can't see itself, but we can become that eye. It's just this. It's just this. Neither changing nor changeless. The eye that sees change is the source of liberation and nothing at all but awake and vast and bright and clear. And restoring some degree of wonder, imparting something of that quality of aware. Now, I like to nerd out on meditation texts. Some people get excited by like a new Netflix series, but for me, I get excited by like a translation of some arcane scripture that someone found in a cave. And I want to get a bit technical and give something of technical advice on your Zazen. Somebody like Hongzhi, who was a Chinese, who is nested in a poetic, metaphorical way of expression, he uses imagery. But sometimes imagery doesn't really get through. It just kind of sounds cool. Oh, a purple pigeon trots on a rotting log. That must refer to something so deep. So I like to be direct. I like to be explicit. And so I want to encourage you to think of your Zazen as having four qualities. The need to be given life, the need to be sustained. They are a kind of guidepost. So first, relaxation. This is both physical, and it's also a spirit of non-striving, a spirit of non-seeking, a spirit, an attitude of serene satisfaction with this life that is. I mentioned last night that the biggest obstacle to concentration is not that you don't have concentration power. It's that you're probably not satisfied with this very experience. And so the mind is entertaining itself. The mind is inclining into seeking and plotting for some moment when pleasure will arrive. And because of that, pleasure does not arrive. Only fleeting, temporary kinds of pleasure. So relaxation, relaxing the body and relaxing the grasping mind. Second quality is vividness or alertness. Hongzhi calls this illumination. Alertly seeing through confusion. Alertly seeing through confusion is the way of silent illumination and the origin of subtle radiance. Alertly seeing through confusion. Alertness is itself bright. This aware mind is itself luminous. But don't look for that light. When you look for that light, you block that light. Jane Hirschfield said, very short poem, it's like moonlight in a well. The one who sees it blocks it. Don't look for that light, for that vividness. Just vivid. Just brightly awake. One of the three poisons, ignorance, you could also call the unconsciousness. And it's related to the tendency to let our consciousness become lo-fi, to become dim. The tendency to let our consciousness become only partially sensitive to our world. It might be useful to reflect on why this happens. What function does this serve? Inner illumination restores wonder. We're restoring the quality of awareness to be hi-fi, bright, sensitive. So alertness, please keep alertness online. Keep intending. Third quality, stability. Stability. This is the medicine of mountain. This is the ancient pine deeply rooted as if forever. And we might say stillness, but in a way, stillness is an idea. Because everything is vibrant. Everything is vibrant, neither moving nor still. To rest, to channel the river of attention right here and right here and right here, to focus. To not constantly be pulled around by the object of the senses. This quality of stability is empowering, is foundational. Now, we often hear about these first three, relaxation, illumination or vividness, and stability. This fourth one in Zen is often just hinted at metaphorically. Sometimes it's called non-discrimination or sameness. I like the word seamlessness. Seamlessness. Darkness most bright, the crane dreams in the wintry mists. We invite, we expand this zazen to cover everything, to embrace everything, invite the whole moment, invite the whole world of this moment without partiality into your zazen. It's not a matter of making a quiet chamber within and rejecting everything that we perceive as external. Discriminating mind, the habit of the mind to dice up, to name and to delineate, parts the body, which is originally seamless, parts this moment, which is originally seamless. The discriminating mind delineates self and not self. And in a way, this is the primal disease of the mind. Now, this function of the mind can be relaxed. It can be detached from. Dan Brown, who is a Mahamudra meditation teacher and also someone who likes to do research on long-term meditators. He did research on meditators doing this kind of inclusive, seamless awareness practice, and they found that the part of the brain that's associated with particularizing and discriminating, when these meditators entered this way of being, that function diminished greatly. In a way, it's like lights out, a temporary dimming of the incessant dividing, opposing, concretizing function of the mind. And because of that, another mode can come forth. So this is workable. So as you settle, as you let the mind come into balance as far as alertness, relaxation, start noticing the overt, the obvious, and the subtle labeling the mind does, and intend to not enact that or not be involved in that. And further, start by appreciating this breathing body as a seamless field. Seamless field. Notice the tendency to dice it up, to think of the head as up here, the feet is down there, the breath somewhere in between, and the mind bouncing between them. Let your life be one seamless field without inside or outside. Undivided continuum. Hafez says it very beautifully. Thousands enter your court. Most people live in a constant state of comparison. Thousands enter your court each day where you judge. How many things, though, get your personal attention to the extent you might actually speak to them or place your hand against their body? Names and forms are drowning before me. Sugar and salt blocks were all things, dissolving now in the ocean of light. Someone calls out for help in the dark, wanting to remain the limited, wanting to keep the nightmare intact. What should I do? What should I do when a door is now open to return to your true self? Relaxation as the art of tenderness, the art of accepting this gift of life as is. Vividness as the art of coming alive, of letting the light of awareness be luminous. Stability, rooting deeply in this very place and time, because in experience there is no other place or time. This is our life. Here and now, and not discriminating, coming to know the ocean and not just being a wave rising and falling. We're just getting started with this session, sitting as the nights lengthen, temperatures drop. Heed autumn's encouragement to keep lit the lamp of practice, to keep lit the lamp of diligence, to deepen and clarify a true refuge in the midst of storms and winds, to keep the heart open, to keep the mind from clouding over for the sake of keeping the heart open. This is a sacred task.